Welcome to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the West Virginia Soccer Association audio and video network. My name is Marcus Cole, Director of Soccer Operations and Branding. Now, before we begin today's show, I want to remind you that once you've had a chance to check out our content, we encourage you to give our podcast a 5-star rating and make sure you follow us wherever you get your podcasts from. That helps you stay up to date with all the latest content from us, and it helps us get the word out to others to let them know that we're providing valuable information for soccer players, coaches, referees, and parents. Now, on the phone with us today is Ian Barker, Director of Coaching Education for United Soccer Coaches. Ian, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Marcus. Thank you very much for having me.
You're quite welcome. Now, Ian, you've been traveling the country constantly, working with coaches at all different levels, helping them become better coaches. And in lieu of that, they become better coaches for their players and help them with player development and encourage our kids to come back to the sport that we love. And for today's purposes of our conversation, I really want to deal with the coaches that are at our grassroots recreational levels. These are the situations where, Johnny, who's an under six player, first time playing soccer ever, the club comes to the father and says, or even the mother, and says, "Hey, we need a coach for the team. Would you be willing to coach the team?" And they're like, "Well, I really don't know a whole lot about soccer. I never really played it, or I've watched it on TV. That's about the extent of my knowledge. You know, I guess I can be the coach." And I mean, we just have so many of those type of coaches out there. I think that providing a good quality basic understanding of some of the principles and some of the goals that they should have going into their coaching sessions and having fun and enjoying their time with their team. Now, why don't you go ahead and just from a real basic standpoint, just give us a basic principle that these coaches should be thinking of as they go in and coach their teams.
Okay, so I think the first place we'd start with is to make sure the kids are having fun. And we say that everywhere, it's written down everywhere. But the distinction I would make, to make it just a little bit more sophisticated, is have fun around soccer. So try to include the soccer ball, try to include the notion of goals, try to incorporate notions of competition and collaboration. But fun is at the end of it. So we want to leave these children coming away from the session, if it's grassroots, perhaps only a 50-minute session, wanting to come back, so that because of the soccer fun that the coach manages, the kids want to come back. From the coach's perspective, I think the first couple of pieces of advice I would give them is breathe and then go there prepared to have play with children. Go prepared to play with children. Don't go prepared to run a coaching session. Don't go prepared to try to teach them passing, shooting, and dribbling as the primary goal. Go there to play with them. And then some of these learning opportunities will come much more organically out of that spirit than going in with a much more formal spirit of trying to be a coach like we perhaps traditionally were brought up with in some of the other American sports, or we're trying to emulate something we've seen on television.
I think that's an interesting point that you bring up, just because I think a lot of frustration, I think, with new coaches is that they have to have this sort of agenda of, we got to do this, we got to do this, we got to do this. And then, you know, dealing with younger kids is challenging just because they're there to have fun. They're there to have it. I mean, that's the reason why they're playing the sport. And I think that's very challenging for young coaches.
Yeah. So a couple of hopefully helpful ideas would be, that if that parent coach or the young coach of the 6-7-year-olds went to the children's school and went to perhaps one of the studies, they wouldn't expect them to be doing algebra or studying Shakespeare. They might be doing addition, subtraction, and they might be doing their ABCs. The same would apply when we go into this youth sport environment. We aren't necessarily trying to explicitly teach soccer. We're trying to give them some developmental foundations that ultimately might lead into understanding technique and tactics. So unfortunately, in the youth sports environment, we start treating the children as adults or mini adults, which we don't do in their educational setting. That would be very key. The other thing that I think can be helpful, because often these coaches are indeed parents themselves, is we have a little idea that you look at the children and you determine what they can physically do. So if they can't really balance, if they can't really hit a ball with their laces, why would we be asking them to do that, even though we know adults can do it? If they cognitively don't understand the abstract notion of space, why would we be yelling at them to spread out when all they want to do is get the ball and kick it because they're 5 or 6? And then finally, we would look at them and say, you know, this is a group that come from the same grade school, they're in the same class, they're in the same social group, so we can maybe, you know, we can mix them up a little differently, but here's a group of kids who have never met each other before, they're a little bit shy, they're a little bit timid, so socio-emotionally, we look at them differently. So we call that developmental appropriateness, and what we're saying to coaches is, before you worry about your training session, is evaluate the children's physical, cognitive, and social abilities, and try to program accordingly.
What do you think are some of the biggest pitfalls that some of these young coaches encounter as they start out, and advice that you would give them to not hit those pitfalls?
Yeah. I think sometimes as coaches, when we're struggling, we want to create a sense of order. So it's sort of sit down, get in lines. It looks very structured. And that might be quite appealing to the parent group sometimes. But I think a completely different way to go is to create the boundaries of the surface and say, okay, everybody, run around, play a game of tag, try to paint the whole surface of the field with the imaginary paint that's on your shoes. But sometimes managed anarchy is a much more vibrant way of letting the kids run around, interact, change direction, change speed, than having them in lines and having them over-structured. So, for example, we will often introduce a game for the kids without a soccer ball. There'll be no soccer ball. It'll just be, let's say, for example, a game of tag. And then we'll bring the ball in, but we'll have them carry the soccer ball. Maybe they carry the soccer ball on one hand, so now they've got some elements of balance, hand-eye coordination. And then finally, maybe 5, 6, 7 minutes in, now you've got to try to manipulate the ball on the ground and still play the tag game. When we've done that, we've achieved a couple of things. We've developed the ideas of the game more simply to more complex, and we've given the kids a chance to move and express themselves and then raise the challenge. Now, somebody might come along and say, well, that doesn't look like soccer. And my response to that is, these are six-year-olds. We're getting more touches on the ball that are meaningful because of the way we've developed this tag game than trying to put them into a shooting line or a passing line or something very formal. So these kids are much more inclined to play, I don't know, Star Wars, for example, than play United versus City. So we need to mess about with their imagination, mess about with their playfulness, and then, when we can, insert the soccer ball and some notion of the fact that this is soccer practice as opposed to gym class or as opposed to lacrosse training. This is soccer, and this is how we do it in soccer.
You bring up an important point in regards to parents. There's a lot of parental expectation, I think, for some of these young athletes of what a training session should look like and what their thoughts are. What advice do you give to coaches to get some parental buy-in, so to speak?
Sure. So I think at the grassroots level, the younger kids, the pressure in the training environment is not as tough on the coach as it is when you start getting into the 11, 12-year-olds maybe, and now parents are paying a little bit more money and their coaches are compensated. So I don't think it's as pressured in the training environment. I do think sometimes on the Saturday when the kids get to play their 3-a-side or 4-a-side, everybody starts to lose their mind and starts thinking they're playing in the World Cup. So I think the pressure comes a bit more there. But what I would do as a coach is I would invite the parents to participate in the session. So in an ideal world, every child has got a parental unit there and every parent is willing to stand up and partner with their own child to start with in some sort of paired collaborative activity. If you can do that, then the magic happens when you say to the children, okay, children, go find a different adult, and the kids can do it. It's a little awkward for the mums and dads when they get this new kid, but everybody works that out. So I like including the parents. It could be including the parents in some, assistant role, so they're managing the bathroom breaks or they're helping pick up equipment. But I think you can actually get some of the mums and dads out of the deck chairs, the ones that haven't, run off to go shopping, and I would actually incorporate them in the training, and if you've got enough soccer balls, have them play with their own kids.
What advice would you give to coaches? I know I experienced this as a grassroots coach a number of years ago when my daughter first started out. You get a lot of some children that are just very introverted and very shy, and sometimes they don't want to participate the entire time. They want to participate at their own speed. What advice would you give to those coaches on how to deal with those children?
Well, thank you for that question, because I think it's a really important one for coaches to have some strategies. So one of the things I like to do is I like to, for example, say, okay, I'm going to show everybody in the group a stretch. So Coach Ian's going to show a stretch. And when I've shown the stretch, I'd like one of you to show a stretch to everybody. So I warn the children, I preempt it that they're going to have this opportunity. And of course, as soon as I've shown a stretch, half the group is desperate to show a stretch. Mm-hmm. And so a little boy or girl shows the stretch. Then I say, okay, the next time I'd like a different, if a boy did, I'd like a girl to show me. Or I'd like somebody different. And very often, by making it less Marcus show me a stretch, but more like a stretch is coming, who would like to show me, you can actually warm some of the kids into that. So that could be a strategy. If you have the child that wants to sort of sit out a lot, before they go and sit with their parents, which could be a strategy, you could say, well, why don't you go sit with mum and watch a little bit and come back when you're ready. That could be quite empowering for the kid and give them a little bit more freedom. The other thing I like to do, though, is I like to say, okay, we're going to play this game. Ian is the boss of the ball, so all the balls are with me, and I roll a ball out, and two kids run and play, and then we put another ball out. But now I ask that child that doesn't want to participate to be my assistant. Could you help me collect the balls, and you're going to stand with me? Could you roll the ball out for the others? And very often, I can include that wallflower kid, that kid that's a little more timid, I can include him or her by making them part of the coaching staff so they don't have to remove themselves from the session. They're now just doing a different task within it, and it's a little bit more private, and it's a little bit more attached to me. And I have a lot of success with that protocol.
Yeah, I like those suggestions. I think one thing that we get into, and I don't know if it's gotten worse or if it's gotten better, is winning. Such a common theme in youth sports. You brought it up earlier that, sometimes people kind of lose their minds a little bit and think it's the World Cup. Give us your thoughts on at this young age and thoughts about winning and what we can do to maybe get away from that a little bit more and concern ourselves with developing our players and making sure they have a good time.
Well, at the grassroots level that we started this conversation off, the sort of the under six, under eight, very often in-house programs, so all the kids participate from the same community. They're just broken into the yellow jackets and the bees and the ladybugs or whatever. In that environment, the more that all of the adults can applaud all of the kids all of the time and be less partisan would be fantastic. So every goal is widely celebrated. Every success is widely celebrated. So I think we as adults have that responsibility. Winning is never not important. But as opposed to the USA women's team playing in the World Cup final, winning is probably the most important thing. When it is your under six, under eight program in West Virginia, it's probably the 20th, 25th most important thing. So I'm not suggesting that winning isn't important. Very often the young children will come to us after the game and say, who won? That is not an unusual response. So they know that winning is important, but they're not necessarily able to keep a track of it, not necessarily. So a lot of the children's response to winning and losing is based on adult response. So if a child, a six-year-old, comes off the field to me and says, "Did we win today, coach?" And I say, "No, we really didn't, but we'll do better next week," it's kind of a downer for the kid. So maybe it's like, "I think we scored 6 or 7. I think they got 5 or 6. But more importantly, we had a, you know," so I think there's different ways of framing it and phrasing it for the children too. But any coach, respectfully, of 6 and 8 year olds who is running around spouting their win loss record has lost the point. And that would be the same for the parents. So celebrate the goals. Make sure the teams can be evenly balanced with in-house programs, because nobody wants to see a group of kids never see the ball. I mean, the point is we want more kids to see the ball, which is why we have to have more small-sided games. But I wouldn't dismiss winning. I just would think that it has a much different place at this level than it does at high school, college, and then obviously professional.
You bring up a very good point about celebrating all the little victories that you have, no matter if it's, you know, your child's team or the other team. One of the things I've, you know, done as a person that has, you know, played soccer since I was a little kid, I always loved good plays, and I still do today. And I know throughout my daughter playing club, playing ODP, sometimes I get a dirty look from another parent when I cheer, you know, when somebody has a great through ball, and I'm like, "Man, that was tremendous," you know, and I outwardly express that. I think it's important for us, for our parents, to acknowledge when the play has been good, no matter, you know, who did it.
Yeah, it's very difficult because you see, and I you can completely understand where it comes from, but when the game gets going, one set of parents is on one side of the halfway line and one on the other. And that, you know, this is at the under six level. So can we get the parent groups interacting more? Can the coaches, I mean, I think if the coaches are standing on the sidelines next to each other, applauding equally, typically, very often, the fan group, the parent group, the guardian group will sort of emulate and respond to what the adults are showing the coaches. So my vision, and I was recently in Portland, Oregon, doing some grassroots coaching. There's one coach on the bench trying to manage substitutions, and there's another one standing on the halfway line trying to remind the kids of which direction they're running in. The coach who's doing the reminding them of which direction, if he or she is standing next to the opposing coach, and they applaud and they kind of get into that mode, I think it can help the parents. You know, it's difficult because the kid's hearing the coach's voice, and sometimes we as adults, we give off too much emotion, which is too impactful on the child in the negative, not the negative emotion, but the disappointed emotion. Oh, you know, let's try harder. Come on, we'll get the next one. Maybe there's a different way of phrasing that, but it's an issue. And certainly, you know, when the kids come running over after the game, before they go back to get their orange and their juice box, it would be great if all the parents could stand up and applaud both sets of little kids running over, as opposed to the blues running to the blue parents and the reds running to the red parents.
Agreed. One of the topics that usually comes up at the grassroots level is playing time. Now, I know a lot of different leagues and different clubs have different sets of rules. And, you know, there's a 50% playing time. I know that we have one of our grassroots league here that has that mandated in their laws and in their rules. I don't think enough parents and enough coaches understand just not the idea of, you know, equal playing time for everybody in that, but just how important playing time is for a child to have fun, get better.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So I was in the most recent example in Portland, Oregon. The game was 25-minute halves, which was way too long. So the game would have been better in 4 8-minute quarters, or whatever, 12-minute quarters, excuse me, for the management purposes of the coach, because the coaches spend half their time trying to work out the rotations of who goes in and when they go in. So it's very challenging for the grassroots coach based on the number of minutes, the number of players that show up on that given day, and then the how it's half times or quarters or thirds or whatever it is. But this is what I would do for a start, is I would aspire to equal playing time for all, during the course of maybe the season. So if you get to the game on a particular day, and let's say one of the kids isn't there for a good reason, or one of the kids is a little injured or a little behind, a little under the weather, or certain circumstances, one kid plays in goal the whole time, you record that. So you know that at the end of that particular game, Ian played 20 minutes, Marcus played 10, and Jimmy played 5. That's not equal playing time. So then the next game you go back to, you make sure you can address that, or you start to balance it out over the course of the season. If you do that, you first of all empower the coach to participate more in the experience of coaching and watching the kids play than continually managing equal minutes, and you make it a lot less stressful for the parents. Now, when I'm thinking grassroots, we're not traveling great distances to get to the games. So it's not the case that we've driven 2 hours across West Virginia and now my kid doesn't get to play. I'm thinking more in the grassroots environment, where if for whatever reason, and it very often is just the child, gets less playing time on that given day, he or she can make it up over the course of the season. And I think if we got more into that spirit of things, it would be helpful. And then if the coach maybe loses perspective a little bit and has their biggest, strongest six-year-old is dominating the game and they decide that's something that's really important for them on that day, they have a chance to take a breath between that game and the next game and maybe sit that stronger kid because we actually slightly overplayed him the last time.
And I think an important component to doing that is being able to have a support system for the coach to be able to help keep that type of information. Because I know being out there in our area, we were encouraged as coaches at the under 6 and under 8 level to be out on the field with our team. So sometimes you just get so wrapped up in just trying to corral everybody and trying to, you know, like you said, point them in the right direction, that sometimes we miss. So, I mean, having somebody on a support staff like that tracking that information is greatly important. Would you agree?
I would absolutely agree. And one of the great opportunities here to really start to change a lot of the negative things we see in our soccer culture, our youth sport culture, is including the parents. So if you've got a group of parents that are extremely involved or at least on the fence, it's an opportunity to bring a parent or two over to the bench side. One could be running the orange juices and juice boxes and bathroom breaks, and another one could just be simply managing tracking minutes, and you could rotate that through. So the parents start to feel maybe included, and some would like to do that. And so now what I'm saying to that coach, that parent, is that the game is 20 minutes long. We have 4 children on the field, so that's a total of 80 minutes. At the end of the game, can you give me a spreadsheet, some form of list of the kids' names and a number next to it, and that number will add up to 80. It's not rocket science. It can be done. And then that coach can then input that into a little Excel document and make sure that by the end of the season, he or she has got to the point that based on the games the kid attended, he or she got roughly half the time in the games they attended, because obviously not all the kids make all the games at the same time. But I think what I like to see is I like to see parents around the field, coaches around the field, creating a stadium effect for the children in the middle. And the children in the middle are by far and away the most important thing. Everybody has a responsibility. The coach to maybe, you know, remind the kids of which way they're running. The parents to give unconditional support and cheer and really do it up. Not coach, but cheer. And then maybe there's that assistant parent coach who has this other role, which is essentially sort of logistical support. And it's really critical. And then people are getting more included. And again, and this is where good organizations can really help. This is your role when you're as a parent. This is your role when you're a coach. So parents yelling, shoot it, kick it, pass it, frankly, doesn't help the environment a lot. Parents applauding and saying, good job, helps a lot more and allows the kid and the coach to focus on that relationship and allows the parent to support the coach and the kid in them.
One question that I get a lot from grassroots coaches is dealing with parents sometimes that get a little bit, I guess we could say, too excited at matches, at trainings, and things along that lines. Do you have some tips or advice on how coaches can interact to help the parents get to a better place that's a little bit more helpful, I guess?
Yeah, I think there are some simple things for the modest challenge. So the more animated the coach, the more the coach is complaining about calls, or the more the coach is pacing the sideline, typically will be replicated by the parents. So the coach actually has a physical and emotional ability to manage that alone. Obviously, if the club can encourage parents to bring deck chairs and we like you all to be seated during the game, that could be helpful. There have been some really interesting programs where they've had essentially a designated volunteer on a rotating basis. And that volunteer, for example, if it's a travel program, when the travel parents from the other team show up, they're the ambassador and says, hi, welcome to our club. Here's the bathrooms. Here's the concession stands. If you need anything, I'm your point of contact. That person could also have a role reminding their own parents of the agreed upon, and I think it has to be agreed upon, behaviors. I quite like this. Some people think it's passive aggressive. One parent each time has a bag of lollipops or stoppers, and if people are getting loud, he or she distributes them with the idea that every parent pops one in their mouth. It means they can't yell and scream. Unfortunately, the simple reality is there's always going to be one or two examples of a person that just can't moderate their behavior. And to some extent, you don't want to get overly confrontational, right? So you got to find that conflict resolution approach to somebody that maybe used some profanity or brought chewing tobacco to the game or is spoiling the environment for the rest of the parents. And how you do that, you know, there's no easy answer, I don't think. But I also think you want to avoid undue confrontation if at all possible.
Now, Ian, before we wrap things up, you're with United Soccer Coaches, wonderful organization. There is a ton of information available through United Soccer Coaches, a lot of free stuff. You have a membership program. You have different courses and licenses and things along that lines. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about that and how coaches can get involved with United Soccer Coaches?
Sure. So any of the grassroots coaches or parents who are listening to your podcast, these are resources that I would encourage you to look at and then share with the other coaches and other parents, because I think the parents need to see these materials out there and maybe bring them to the coach if the coach isn't finding them. So state association websites like West Virginia have content. Massachusetts Youth Soccer particularly has some wonderful content that they have open source for coaches to download, lesson plans for ages. So Mass Youth Soccer is one.
Yes, they do. They have wonderful information.
Yeah, and kudos to my colleague Ian Mulliner. My company, my organization has a website with a resource library of about 1,200 pieces of video, lesson plans, interactive training sessions, and that's completely free. We also have a suite of 10 to 15 e-learning products, and the best one by far is called Foundations, which is about 2 hours of content for coaching grassroots players. It's in 6 chapters, and it talks about motivation. It explores that topic of developmentally appropriate that I mentioned. Those e-learning products are completely free too. The coach or the parent goes to unitedsoccercoaches.org, sets up a one-month trial membership completely free, and they can access the resource library, and they can access the e-learning content, and they have a month to do so. So I would really encourage people to do that because, again, it's free, which seems to be the appropriate price point in the grassroots space. I maintain a Twitter account, iBarkerSoccer. I post for the grassroots market. And a lot of my friends, Smedley's is a really good one. He posts a lot of stuff. And so if you like Twitter and you follow people like myself, Mass Youth Soccer, West Virginia Soccer, that's good. And then any of the coaches or parents that are listening to this podcast and would like to call me for more resources, I'll share my email address, which is iBarker, B-A-R-K-E-R, so I for Ian, Barker, at unitedsoccercoaches.org. And if there are people listening that didn't quite get everything they needed from this and they want to email me, my job is to support coaches as a resource. I'm happy to do it.
And Ian, you provide a lot of valuable content on your Twitter. So if you're not following Ian, you certainly need to. And we usually end up retweeting a lot of the stuff that you put out too, because it's, like I said, it's just very valuable information and very pertinent and on point. Well, Ian, I certainly appreciate you.
I think sometimes people, it gets very commercial. At the end of the day, soccer's a fairly global sport, and a lot of the information should be much more accessible and freely available than everything has a price point. So happy to make it open source.
Awesome. Ian, I thank you so much for being on our podcast today and taking the time to provide some value to our members.
No, you're very welcome. Good luck to West Virginia and all the other people running grassroots around the country.
Thank you for listening to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the West Virginia Soccer Association audio and video network. Now that you've heard the podcast, make sure you give our podcast a 5-star rating and follow us wherever you get your podcasts from. We'll see you next week.